This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a Joy 94.9 podcast presented by Paul Anthony with the assistance of the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officers, Victoria Police, Crime Stoppers and Joy 94.9 working together to make our community safe.
Joy 94.9, Paul Anthony with you, and also Senior Constable Gabby Tyack on the Victoria Police Glow Show. We're here every Wednesday, 11 through to 12. Our next guest joined the Protective Services Unit in 1996. He was with the Australian Regular Army with the Infantry Corps for 15 years. Then he became a Shrine Guard in 1997. He joins us in the studio, Peter Scott. Welcome to Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning.
15 years as in the Australian Regular Army. What does that mean? Is that just another word for saying the normal army?
Used to be a big differentiation between what is now the Army Reserve and the Regular Army, which has merged a lot lately with overseas activities in like Iraq, where the Reserve actually go overseas now and are more part of the Army as a whole.
You attended Trinity Grammar. Was that a school that actually encouraged people to join the Army?
No, not really. They encouraged academic pursuits.
How does that fit in with your education then?
I actually left at the end of year 11 to go and do an art course at what was then Caulfield Tech, which is now Chisholm, went to Chisholm and then became Monash, part of Monash. And while I was doing that, I wasn't really, didn't suit me, of course. I don't think I had the talent for it. So I left that and went to a moratorium march, actually, the one that Dr. Cairns actually addressed, and picked up my enlistment papers on that day, which sounds a bit strange, but yeah, that's how I ended up in the Army. Yeah.
Army for 15 years, an experience never to forget?
Oh, definitely. And you make a lot of good friends, but one thing you do is you never forget that time. I never did active service, so possibly the bond mightn't be quite as strong as what it would have been between active service members.
And active service means?
In a war situation and even in some peacekeeping operations as well.
You left the Army in 1986. You joined the Protective Services Unit in 1996. It's a bit of a 10-year gap there. What did we do in 10 years?
In that time, I basically did some delivery work and did a little bit of work for National Bank and a very small amount for the Westpac Bank as well, just contracted work.
Is there any rumour that you actually... Sorry, is there any truth in this rumour that you actually travelled around, is it the Northern Territory, on a motorbike?
Yeah, that was after I got out of the Army and wanted to do a bit of wandering around and get away from the discipline side of things. And I bought myself a motorbike and toured around up north for about 8 months. Yeah.
What was that like, coming out of 15 years of yes sir, no sir, and then just being on your own?
Yeah, I've always been able to switch the yes sir, no sir thing off and relax a bit. So I ended up, it was just a wonderful experience, having only done it in a military situation before, not as a private citizen.
So should we start saying yes sir, no sir to you, Paulie?
Yeah, why not?
One thing that people can't see is that Peter's here in his uniform, and it's khaki-coloured uniform. Correct. And it looks like it's an army uniform.
It is actually. It's like the dress of the day that the army wears when they're in barracks and not operationally. Like, then it's not camouflage, it's like what they call polyesters. And included in that, of course, is we have the slouch hat and the emu feather, which the Shrine Guard wears, which used to represent the light horse. And some of the regular army units still, cavalry units still wear them.
I'd like to know a little bit about the hat, because I don't really understand why you've got one side of it pushed up. I don't know how you describe that. And also the feather that's attached to the hat.
The reason it's turned up at the side is the old rifles that the military used to carry, when they still carry them on a parade ground, they had them on their shoulder. If they hadn't had to turn the side of the hat up, it would have knocked the hat off every time they moved the
rifle. Ah, right. That makes sense.
So, yeah.
And is there a left-handed and right-handed hat?
No, it's only the left-hand side, because it was always carried on the left shoulder. And the feather was actually adopted by the Shrine Guard, who originally were all return servicemen and decorated, and they were became part of the actual police department. They were actual policemen.
Let's have a look at the uniform you're wearing. Can you describe the uniform that you actually do have on you at the moment?
Well, the uniform I'm wearing at the moment is actually just our normal day-to-day uniform, with the exception that I'm wearing what is called, termed a Sam Bram, which if it's a brand belt that goes around your waist and it's got a shoulder strap, and originally worn by the officers to carry swords on, basically. And we use it to carry our bayonet for our rifles, which are Lee Enfield 303 rifles, and they have a long bayonet, which is quite heavy, so we use the Sam Bram to support that.
Just above your pocket, you've got a blue and white badge.
The blue and white is called a ribbon, and it's presented by the police department to members of the police force and protective service unit members for 10 years of ethical service within the police department.
Moving on to the other side, you've got a coloured one.
Yeah, I've got three on that side. One's originally, it's red and white, and it's actually the volunteer medal. So you had to do approximately 3 years to get that one. The one in the centre is for 15 years. It's blue and gold, and it's called the Defence Force Service Medal. And then I've got the Australian Service Medal, which is post-1985, which is for service overseas but not active service.
These are quite an honour to have, aren't they?
They're just a recognition of time spent, basically, in Defence Department.
Yeah. All right. Now, what about the rifle that's above the police ribbon?
Yeah, well, these are a fairly recent addition. They're a replica of a miniature replica of a Lee Enfield 303 rifle, and we would just wear that to show that's where we actually carry them, because these days we don't carry them every day. We only use them for services in ceremonial occasions. We quite often wear the police equipment belt, what we do all the time when we're around the shrine.
And to finish off, you've got epaulettes. It's yellow, but it's not actually a stripe, is it? It's a bit like an arrow.
Yeah, they call it a chevron, in actual fact. Yeah, it's that's my rank. And you've probably seen, like, senior constables around, they have the two chevrons. So this is a single one, and this one's Protective Service Officers Class 1.
What role do shrine guards have today?
Well, our role really hasn't changed. The Shrine Guard was formed in 1935 by the then Chief Commissioner of Police, who was Field Marshal Sir Thomas Blamey. At that stage he wasn't, but he became later the Field Marshal. The whole purpose was to have a security presence at the Shrine, and they were actually police constables at that stage. And they used to police the area with the Shrine, the Gardens area, and all through the Domain area there.
Not everyone knows what Anzac Day is all about. Some people think it might be glorifying war. But so can you give us a little bit about what's the significance of Anzac Day and using the shrine and the celebrations on Anzac Day?
My personal opinion on the Anzac Day really is that it's the spirit of it more. A lot of these soldiers now from the First World War and Second World War are gone, and a lot of their principles were good principles, and I think that we should just remember them and just try and maintain a safe, secure and an Australia for everybody.
Messaging from Tex asking, the shrine today, why is it significant for us to have?
For the reason that we should try and, I think we need to have it, because there are certain principles that we need to maintain and uphold within our country, and that's why a lot of course, people come to our country, because of the way it is.
I look at it as remembrance of people who've served the country and fought for our country. Mm. And, I mean, I don't know when Anzac Day, when we first started to celebrate it, but, I mean, the Anzacs, it was 1915 in the First World War, I think.
1418. It was 1914 to 1918.
You know, going to Gallipoli and the Australian New Zealand Army Corps. Mm. And that's where name of the Anzacs came from. So when did we actually start celebrating it as a national day?
It became a national day. I'm not exactly sure when it actually became celebrated like that. But the Shrine of Remembrance, for example, was opened in 1927. It was opened in 1934, but it was built between 27 and 34. That was actually built to remember everybody that served in World War One originally. So that it wasn't just people that had died, it was everybody that had served.
A few questions coming in for you, Peter, but I want to ask mine first. What's it like being a shrine guard?
It's fantastic. A really good job. You get to talk to a lot of tourists from overseas and interstate. We get a lot of school groups going through the shrine these days, because we now have an educational side to the shrine. So we get to speak to a lot of school children, and of course you can imagine some of the questions that they throw at us, you know. And so it's really I think it's really important that we learn from our mistakes of the past, and by doing that, not forgetting them, just to remind people that this is what can happen if we let the not-so-nice people in the world try to take over, you know.
Andrew would like to know, when was it built?
It was actually built between 1927 and 1934. And there's some really good distinctive features, and I'm sure a lot of people have been to the shrine. And it's, of course, it's of a Greco type, a Greek type style architecture. Yeah.
Kim should like to know, she says she's often wondered if the shrine actually possesses any land. That's a good question. Kim, does it?
The shrine actually comprises of 14 hectares of land with the main monument on it.
So the shrine's just not the building. It's
it's 14 hectares of land with buildings and and also with the main building, of course. And also you've got the forecourt area, which was built to remember the World War II veterans. And then you have on the western side a water garden between the shrine and St Kilda Road, which is for everything since wars or peacekeeping operations.
And I understand there's a number of trees with plaques representing different things.
Yeah, there's a lot of trees around which have plaques of representing units from the wars, and also there's also countries. There's some from actual, like Canada has a tree, for example, and that. So they're mainly British, the old British Commonwealth countries. But the United States has a tree as well. So.
Tom would like to know, do they have shrine tours?
They do. We have volunteer guides that take people on tours every day. And so you can just come into the shrine and there's usually a guide waiting for groups to come through and they'll take them through.
I've got another question. I've always wondered this. Is there a secret passage under the shrine at all?
No.
No?
No, no, there's only drains and things like that. You know, there's no, rather large ones, because as you can imagine, the water catchment off the shrine is pretty.
Right. Because, well, I said secret passage, so if it was secret, you're not going to tell me, are you?
No, that's right. It wouldn't be a secret.
Then. Could be still there. I do notice, though, standing on the shrine, was it built to actually look back up Swanston Street? Because it's kind of in line, isn't it?
Yeah, it was built. It was actually built. The front of the shrine used to be the southern side, which is the side that faces away from the city, because people that were approaching from St Kilda, from the direction of St Kilda, would actually come up upon the shrine. And then, as you know, the road sort of weaves around the hill and then on into the city. But the best way to see the shrine is to walk right from the northern side, from the bottom right up, because it looms up on you and it's quite impressive.
An email from Justin. He says, I don't think it's so much of a celebration, more to remember. Those who fought for the freedoms of the time, to defend our country and its people's freedom. The servicemen who fought had a job to do. Some people like it, some don't, but they did it with their heart and soul. So we remember the effort they went to in their time for all our futures.
Yes, and now the Anzac Day, Sunday, April 25. Lest we forget, the dawn service kicking off at 6 a.m. More information, get across to shrine.org.au.
I just would like to add too, it's the Shrine Guard's 75th anniversary this year as well. So it's a bit of a milestone for us.
Fantastic.
70th, did you say?
75th.
75th?
Yeah, 1935 the Shrine Guard was created.
How many Shrine Guards are there?
At the last count, I think there was about 23. So there's not a lot of us, yeah.
And it would be a hard job to get into?
It helps if you... Well, you have to be in the Protective Services Unit first, so you've got to go through the academy and do the course to become Protective Service Officer, and then from there on you apply to become a Shrine Guard, and you have to then go away and do a short course for rifle drill and learning about the Shrine Act, which is...
So Army Service would probably help you get that position?
It helps, but it's not necessary. Only about, I think, half of us have got military service.
Peter Scott from the Protective Service Unit's Shrine Guard, thank you so much for joining us here on Joy. I'd love to keep talking to you, but the afternoon show is creeping up on us. So thank you once again for joining us here on Joy.
It's been a pleasure.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy. a diverse sound for a diverse community.